2 years, since we've seen so much attention around police shootings and police killings, you know, there's been a ton of attention focused around holding officers accountable and all the ways in which officers are not held accountable. And I think that what we've seen with these types of prosecutions is a particularly egregious way in which officers are not only not held accountable, but the very people who are alongside people who are killed by police are the ones themselves held accountable and whose lives are snatched away. I think it's also important to underline that, you know, policing snatches lives on the street with, you know, many of these shootings, which are seen as extrajudicial killings. But look at what we found when the judiciary is involved. There are still lives snatched away. One of the things Timothy Jones said was he thinks of Jacqueline Reynolds, who was the innocent bystander. He thinks of her every day because not only was her life lost, his was too.
And Allison Flowers, are police using this murder, this felony murder rule, to protect their own misconduct?
That is what we heard from experts about this, that it's really a red flag for misconduct when you see civilians or co-arrestees, suspects being charged with a killing that they didn't commit, but that police did. It's often a red flag for misconduct. And, you know, here in Chicago, we have a problem with that, as we see nationwide, of course. But we know that 97% of Chicago police misconduct complaints go undisciplined. And so there really is a problem of impunity where police officers face little discipline. And it's pretty easy for them to shift blame.
We have to leave it there. Allison Flowers and Sarah McRae will link to your piece in the Chicago Reader. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is more talk radio with our hosts Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Pan-African Women's Day, Saturday, August 27th at In Other Words Bookstore in Portland. A panel of African women from different organizations will be highlighting the issues impacting African women across the globe, and to highlight the necessity for African women to be united and organized on a worldwide basis against imperialism. Edutainment and childcare will be provided. Again, that's Pan-African Women's Day, Saturday, August 27th at 5:30 p.m. at In Other Words Bookstore, 14 North Killingsworth in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Minority Cannabis Business Association Marley Natural Expungement Day, August 27th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Village Ballroom in Portland. Expungement means to set aside arrests or convictions. Attendees that have applicable nonviolent cannabis-related crimes on their criminal record will leave the event with their expungement paperwork approved and processed by sponsored legal assistants. Again, that's the Expungement Day, August 27th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Village Ballroom, 704 Northeast Deakum Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO, your community radio station. This is More Talk Radio, and I am Cecil Prescott. If you're listening to KBOO, you are listening either on KBOO.fm on the World Wide Web, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, or 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany. We thank you for joining us this morning. And today is the 22nd day in the month of August in the year 2016. So I believe the Olympic Games are about over or near the end. or if you're just watching replays, it will be over soon. Certainly is something that has captivated many nations, and there are many sports stories, human interest stories, and I suppose politically niche stories of political interests. I wanted to begin by sharing an article that I came across by a writer and podcast that I really enjoy reading. His name is Michael Harriet. He's you can see him in theroot.com. He has a digital magazine, Negus Who Read, and has a podcast as well. He wrote some reflections, and I want to read it. It is published in theroot.com, and it's entitled "The Politics of Lying White People and the Black People Who Bear the Burden." You'll get the meaning of the article as I read it. He writes, "The worst whipping I ever received when I was 8 years old. Among the draconian rules that governed my mom's house was an archaic list of words she outlawed in the home. Along with the customary cuss words, for some reason, she forbade us from calling any other human being a liar or a dog. One day, my three sisters and I were sound asleep taking our forced daily nap when we were overcome by a rancid smoke. My mother burst into the room and found, to everyone's surprise, that there was a smoldering flame coming from the compartment in the dresser where she kept my basketball footies, my sister's church tights, and every other piece of footwear for me and my sisters. The sock drawer was on fire. Although all of my sisters and I were in the same room, no one would confess to the sock drawer arson. So my mother went down the line and displayed one of the finest spanking forms in the history of parentdom. I actually received an epic, almost historic, double dose because when she reached me, I, in a fit of rebellious rage after trying to cajole my sisters into a confession, stupidly but loudly proclaimed that whoever had set the sock drawer on fire was a lying-ass dog. A few days later, Ryan Lochte fabricated a story that he was robbed at gunpoint by a roving group of brown-skinned gangster thugs who brought guns, secured a getaway car, and had police uniforms, all in an effort to get a few wallets. Although it sounded fishy to a lot of people, most of America immediately believed it because white fright. America's empire are built on a little white lie that rests on the premise that people of color are scary and dangerous. There is a long history of white people gaining money, power, influence, sympathy, or a few more Twitter followers by using the currency that is the dark skin demon. It buys white fright. And in America, with white fright on your side, you can get anything you want. Now, there are countless white fright stories of white men coercing women into accusing black men of rape to initiate lynching and retake valuable lands from newly freed slaves in the post-Reconstruction South. In 1918, when black sharecroppers in Phillips County, Arkansas, began to unionize and combine resources, farmers spread the word as far as Mississippi of a black conspiracy to murder white planters. The result was 237 dead black men, women, and children, and one of the worst mass lynching in U.S. history. Lion-ass dogs. He continues to write, America's war on drugs began when newspaper baron William Randolph Hearst decided that hemp production might endanger his pulp and paper empire, so one of his papers editorialized that now famous quote, "Marijuana influences Negroes to look at white people in the eyes, step on white men's shadows, and look at white women twice." This is the drug war. This drug war was a black thing almost sounded like a tinfoil hat conspiracy theory until last year, when aide from the Nixon administration, who invented the term war on drugs, revealed to CNN. You understand what I'm saying. We knew we couldn't make it illegal to be either against the Vietnam War or black, but by getting the people to associate the hippies with marijuana and blacks with heroin, and then criminalize both heavily, we could disrupt their communities. We could arrest their leaders, raid their homes, break up their meetings, and vilify them night after night on the evening news. Did we know we were lying about the drugs? Of course we did.
Did we care?
One of the reasons accusations of racism seem so inflammatory is that there is a widespread belief that pointing out a racist act automatically means that the person who did it hates people of color. Contrary to popular belief, racism does not necessarily equal hate. Racism sometimes manifests itself in the privileged apathy that does not consider people of color a lower, lesser form of humanity. Instead, people of color are not considered at all. To some people, they are just brown props on a white stage to be manipulated and used as needed. We are step tools and stools. They don't always shoot black people in the face or string them from trees. Sometimes they just carelessly toss us under the bus of their choosing. Like when in 1994, White Fright went viral with Susan Smith, who told the story of how a black man carjacked her in South Carolina while her sons were in the car, only for it to turn out that she murdered them and drove them into a lake. Like how the elder President George Bush swept into office on a platform of white fright with the Willie Horton ad that portrayed Democratic candidate Michael Dukakis as soft on crimes because he furloughed a black convict who went on to rape and murder a white woman. It is still considered the greatest and most effective campaign ads in political history. Like when Charles Stewart was murdered in Boston and he was left injured after a black man invaded their home. Police terrorized every black neighborhood in the entire New England area, and Massachusetts lawmakers even considered reinstituting the death penalty because investigators realized that Stewart had killed his wife for the insurance money. Like how Donald Trump coalesced a political following and undercut a class of politicians far more experienced and smarter than he by standing on the platform of walling out Mexican rapists and kicking out Muslims. Like how Hillary Clinton built a career on helping children and minorities until political expediency and the thirst for a little more power made her barnstorm the country, warning America that we had to bring the super predators to heel and kick the welfare queens off welfare, even as sociologists in her husband's own cabinet warned that neither of those were a viable solution. It did not matter. It never does. Ultimately, they all considered black people to be chattel, to be used or tossed aside at their convenience. Whether they are trying to become the leader of the free world or get another post-Olympic season of a reality show, they don't care because brown and black people are just things in their eyes. Last year, my oldest sister finally unraveled the most enduring mystery of my lifetime when she confided to me that she was the one who had set the sock drawer on fire. I don't think she let me take that whipping because she hated me. Like Ryan Lochte, she was just playing with fire and things got out of hand. But I do believe that one of the truest revelations of character is the split-second decision you make when the world, society, or your mama is holding a belt, looking down on your throat, waiting for the truth. Sometimes it is solely up to you whether you accept responsibility or let someone else take a beating. In that moment, some people would never allow another person to suffer for their own personal gain. The others, like Ryan Lochte, are lying ass dogs. So right, Michael Harriet and his commentary on the Olympics.
Oh gosh, I sat captivated listening to you in the car. I couldn't get out. First, there was that seemingly benign reverie and remembrance of getting lined up for the spankings.
Oh yes.
And then there was the thing, you know, with well, actually that was first, what words you were not allowed to say. And you know, I thought about how there are so many views into Black culture that so much of the world is not allowed to see because they don't want to look and open their eyes, and that is the instillment of value. You know, lying ass dog. Yeah, that was one of those words. Yeah.
Not allowed to say.
And the whole idea behind it is that despite the way society portrays you, you knew that you were a better person and you were obligated at least to your mama to act like it. At the very least, to your mama. But beyond that, you know, it's funny how in two separate ways we ended up thinking about some of the same things. And it's just a sign of the times, I think, that it is very hard to get past the image and the results of those images that that the world holds about Black folk and Black people and how we are seen. And I had the opportunity to interview Gabrielle Hayden, the one that you had helped set up, and we are reviewing poetry that it elegizes Black lives that have been lost to murder or capital sanctioned murder. And when you look at the range from, you know, whatever comes out of happens at convenience stores or gas stations, all the way to what we listen to in Amy Goodman's program just a moment before us, and talking about, you know, state-sanctioned misconduct and loss of Black lives, it's kind of hard not to escape it. I mean, even this weekend I had a discussion with an acquaintance of mine, and he was saying, and he's a white man, of course, that he just thinks that, yes, this is serious stuff, but we're all tired of hearing about it. And I thought, what a luxury. And it's not the things need to be put in someone's face out of spite or out of revenge, you know, any misguided attempt at vengeance, but it's more of, it never leaves our face. We cannot, as human beings, continue to contain this horror. And so, because you are sanctioning a political dynamic that continues to perpetrate and perpetuate this horror, you're going to deal with it too, one way or another, the fallout. And so I look at this situation and I want to ask a lot of people, well, what are you willing to do? What are you willing to give up to make the change? Where are you in recognizing that what little value a system of white supremacy affords anybody and make that change. And it has to come bubbling up from the masses, because the moment the masses stop cashing in on whatever benefits or privileges they get, then the situation will change by default. I know it sounds like revolution, don't it?
Yeah. that's all right. There comes a time. Another point I want to make in this discussion as we begin to open up is I don't want it to be seen as only in terms of black people or brown people or people mm-hmm. who are oppressed. I think this is a resiliency in our cultures, and I just, you know, going back to the Olympics, I thought it was fascinating that, you know, it took place in Brazil,
mm-hmm.
And mostly black and brown nation,
mm-hmm.
And you had the contrast with this ridiculous story of white supremacy, of privilege, contrasted with the life of most of the people in that nation, and then that strange story, which is a case study on white privilege and white power of Mr. Lochte and his friends,
cronies. I don't know what to call them.
Who were often portrayed initially as, and I think one of the officials, after this stories came out, I'm not sure whether it's a U.S. Olympic official or the International Olympics, mm-hmm. said, you know, well, you know, these are just boys.
Boys.
And
boys,
you know,
will be boys.
Boys will be boys. The fact that they are adult men.
Thank you.
But it's sort of like they get a pass. And the media all automatically assumes, as the article points out, that, you know, black or brown men did something really wrong, and these we have to protect all women and children from these horrible people. In spite of that history, there's a resiliency in our cultures and our peoples that say, you know, we will rise.
I don't know. It leaves you kind of speechless to see these things replicated. And so, you know, one of the things that I want to exhort folks for whom this might be a triggering situation is to do not be afraid to get help. Be discerning when you go looking for help. And I'm talking about emotional, mental, physical help, you know, whichever one is necessary. Be discerning. Don't settle for someone who doesn't care about your need for well-being, but seek some help, because again, this is a trying time. Outside of things that I'm dealing with myself personally, it's just walking around and being afraid all the time. How do we get past this and stay productive? And how do you get past the reticence of people who have an ability to make a change and exhort them into being productive? I don't know. That's the they used to call it, the $64,000 question. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't want to make it totally heavy, but I do want to just talk about it because, well, I don't know. But for black and brown folks, this is what we're experiencing every day. Yeah, doggone it.
I can't apologize.
I had enough. What is it? The guy raises up the window and shut it out loud. I've taken all I can take. I can't take it no more. I don't know. I guess what I would say would be one of the things that I would want to hear people say. If you call up and you're a person of color, you know, what is your means of self-help and staying connected productively to society? Because I find it really helpful to just totally unplug sometime. I unplugged this weekend. Mm-hmm. And try to recover and use positive means. And then for all of our white listeners, how do you stay positively engaged by beating back all those powers that be that insist that you play your white card, you know? Whether it's making sure that you get waited on by the cashier, and maybe you were not the first one in line, or beating a traffic ticket or whatever, you know, how do you resist that urge to play the card? How do you do fairly? How do you give up that? How do you give up that privilege and do what's right? Because you're cashing in on everybody that's paid in, and white privilege is not based on white people paying in, except for the very poor and undesirable, not the right white people.
So give us a call. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187, and share your perspectives from the two queries posed by Celeste. Let's go to a caller.
Good morning, Cody. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you guys doing this morning?
I am waiting on some sunshine.
Sunshine's a good thing. We're going to have a lot of sunshine.
Okay, metaphorically as well as literally.
Well, you know, you got to keep your hope up. You got to stay happy.
Indeed.
I heard Cecil's op-ed that he read this morning, and historically speaking, what black people are going through isn't new.
No.
The Jews have dealt with it for a very long time in Europe, right up until, you know, it was public knowledge when Nazi Germany was exposed. Mm-hmm. A lot of that's connected to economics. As far as the privilege is concerned, a lot of whites don't realize that they are privileged. And then you have to deal with the spectrum of whites that goes from working class on up. It gets complicated. Yes, they do have more opportunity than hardworking blacks. I can attest to that. I'm a black male that works in industry dominated by white males. And it pays well, but it's dominated, and it's maintained its domination. It has a great deal to do with power and money. And as far as the white flight's concerned, that had a great deal to do with power and sex. And the a subject that really should be talked about because it gets closer to what black people are dealing with. We're dealing in a situation now where as the economics get more difficult, black people are going to feel it. And black people who aren't used to feeling it are going to feel it. There, we have a lot of fracturing amongst black people, and that fracturing has to stop. And mainly because black people are more separated now than they were back when they were being hosed down and attacked by dogs and police officers in tandem. So that entire system of self-help for black people have been totally dismantled under the deception of integration. And we're realizing in hindsight that we've been fooled. Like Malcolm X said, we have been bamboozled, but it took us about 40 or 50 years to see it with our own eyes. It started with white flight. Then it started with redlining. And now we understand that redlining ended up in gentrification. But it took a 40-year plan for it to be successfully implemented on black people to see it. What scares me is how a lot of old black people don't see this.
Well, do you think that they don't see it, Cody, or do you think it's more that I don't want to call it learned helplessness, but it's more like, what difference does it make if I see it? You know, I've got to hold on to something deeper, because remember, we're talking about a group of people that basically have been looking at some 400 years of violent subjugation, and then another 200 or so
a little less than,
you know.
And what you say makes a great deal of sense. When I see something by myself, let's say a UFO, and if I see it by myself, I say, you know what? It's me, or maybe I'm seeing things, I'll let it go. But if there are a group of people, if I'm not by myself, and we as a group see that same thing, it changes the entire dynamic. The problem is that a lot of black people are too fractured. We have too many fractured groups within groups that are undermining other black people in their struggle to have something that resembles equality.
Well, that's the point, Cecil.
So what do you think is the reason for that fracture within the black community?
We never was given a chance to heal. And my pet peeve with KBOO is that no one is making an honest effort to get in contact with Joy DeGruy of Portland State University. She comes closest to explaining our psyche and the issues that we have to deal with.
I have to correct you on that. We had Joy here when she was very first started on her studies for that.
Okay. Well, we need to have more talks like that.
Well, then we'll do that. Okay, I hear you.
Well, mainly because we have to start from square one.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me?
I just said, uh-huh, yes.
Okay. And we've never been given a chance to heal from the trauma that our parents would not tell us about because it was so bad.
Yes.
And as a result of that trauma, we found ourselves easily deceived by a system, because the system is based off of fear. So what do? Well, you go along with the program, or you find yourself starved out. Now,
okay, we're loving the conversation, but we got a couple of more folks waiting.
Okay, let me let you go. All right, then. Bye-bye.
Hey, you know, come visit the show sometimes.
Well, you know, visit?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well,
think about it. You know how to reach us.
Okay, then. Well, I'll do that.
All righty.
Well, I'll let you guys go. You have a show.
All righty. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
It'll
be great to have a conversation with
And especially being from a different part of the country and having observed it, because, you know, this is 2016, almost 2017, and I've been here since 1988, and I'm amazed at how, you know, the time period for how long people can be here without really just hitting that wall has really shortened. It's contracted.
Yes.
I think it's turned from years to months now.
22 hours, and that's it.
That's it. I'm out of Portland. 503-231-8187. Good morning, Ann. You're on the air.
Hello. So you would ask the question, what are white people willing to give up?
Yes.
And, so I am just one person, and I don't have a lot of answers, but I can say that there are some white people, not a lot, but there are some who are able to see their privilege. It's hard to do that when you're swimming in it. It's kind of like the Matrix. It takes effort. But there are organizations, there are coalitions of white anti-racists that are doing their best to repudiate dominance and dismantle systemic racism. And I can give you the names if you want.
Sure, give us a couple
yes,
of your names for the listeners.
So there's SURGE, which is a nationwide organization. It's S-U-R-J, showing up for racial justice, and you can Google it. There's a local chapter in Portland. It's growing, it's surging in growth.
Good.
And in Seattle, there's the Coalition of Anti-Racist White. There's an annual White Privilege Conference that you can go to. I'm not sure where the next one is. So personally, I have decided to not wait for the government to authorize reparations. I do what I can when I can. And I know there are other people that do that. Oh, there's also a reparations website called reparations.me, run by an artist in Seattle. So for the white listeners out there, there are things you can do. There are things you can do to educate yourself about your privilege. And I've been doing this work for about 25 years, and I will admit that for the first 20 years, I was doing it because it was the right thing to do. But I haven't read the whole Black Lives Matter platform, but I've read the table of contents and some of the demands. And if the white listeners will just take the time to read that, they will see that that platform benefits all of us. So that's all I have to say.
Well, that actually is a lot.
And I want to ask you, you mentioned you've been doing this work for decades. What keeps you going?
I am not from this country, and I had to make a decision about 25 years ago whether I was going to stay in this country. And I had spent some time out of the country, so I got to see it from the outside in. I got out of the matrix. Yes. And I decided that if I was going to stay here, I wanted to be part of the solution and not part of the problem. And for me, racial justice is it's the most fundamental issue for this country. So that's what keeps me going, because we're not done yet.
Well, thank you for doing the work. And, you know, feel free, as we offered Cody, feel free to, you know, come by and talk about what the work is that you're doing sometime here at the station. It's really important that we work with everybody who is engaged in dismantling this system. And it is hard, life-draining work. But the good thing about it is even the small successes are life-affirming.
I hope so. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 503-231-8187. Good morning, David from San Diego.
Oh, no, San Francisco.
Oh, San Francisco. Well, still, West Coast, and it's still the Saint City. Okay. Oh, I love San Francisco. I lived there for a while, and yes, it can steal your heart.
And as a matter of fact, we're the home of your sister station, KPU.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah, they're a great station. Hey, you know, I didn't realize that you were exactly talking about reparations. I could give you a sweet tip for a target, and it goes. it's a bank. It's HSBC, which it stands for Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation.
Oh, yes.
And they, in the last year or so, got busted for doing money laundering for the drug cartels.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you think about how crack has decimated black property ownership, and that this bank was not only looting neighborhoods, but how many people, how many families had to put their kids up, put the house up for bail, and then the kid being hooked on crack, the house is lost, right? So the whole idea that HSBC had a pattern and practice for 30 years at minimum of money laundering for organized crime, talk about reparations target. You know, and that's not, you know, slavery of 200, 300, 400 years ago. This is like now, and in the last 30 years. And it makes the logic of reparations immutable. It's you got a great opportunity. I've been urging, you know, I call up a lot of radio talk shows, and there's another scandal also that's similar. It's called the LIBOR, LIBOR. And I've been urging, you know, city managers and mayors and all sorts of people to start lawsuits against the LIBOR. That was the LIBOR is how most of the interest rates of the world are set, And for probably 30 years, you can prove now that the LIBOR was fraudulently setting interest rates. There's even an email where this guy bribes a guy $15 million to set a decimal point difference, and it made him, God knows how much money. You know, it probably into the billions of, you know, just by setting a fraudulent decimal point. And basically, Greece, you know, many nations are going bankrupt officially, you know, because of the LIBOR. The LIBOR fraudulently set Greece's credit rating was horrible.
Okay, this is what we would suggest, because calling up on the radio is a good thing, but because you know so much about it, it would be beneficial to hook up with one of these organizations like Ann mentioned, like Surge, and maybe guide them on this venture. Because we weren't speaking of reparations specifically, but it sounds as though you've got a lot of information that could benefit an organization like Surge.
Sure.
Or maybe like your local chapter of Black Lives Matter.
Well, I do in a way. What I do is I hook up with a lot of different nonprofits, and I help them get their message out.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, down here in San Francisco, there's a 100-year-old woman being evicted. Actually, she got evicted last Friday. And the one of the owners of this house is the economics, the community economics director of Burlington, Vermont. And this guy had the sickness in his heart to evict a 100-year-old woman and charge her $164,000 in legal fees. I mean, can you imagine a 100-year-old woman being handed a bill for $164,000 in legal bills because she's got the gumption to fight an eviction? And
yeah, I can imagine that she's probably blew her nose on it and handed it back.
Well, I
that's what I would do as a 100-year-old woman. I'd say, well, you know what?
Right. But think of, he was the economic director
I got
for
it.
A whole
I hear
a
you.
County, a region.
I hear you.
Northern Vermont. And it's amazing that the that this is the crap that passes for economics.
Well, you have to remember something about people and money. And a person who has that kind of heart and has that kind of fruit has apparently suffered from that evil called the love of money is the root of all evil. Okay.
Oh, mammon. Hey, one last thing. I was talking
real quick
to Joe Hill. I was talking to Joe Hill last night, so that's what spurred me to call.
Oh, okay. Well, nothing like getting activated.
Yeah. And Dave, good week.
All righty.
Thank you so much. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. My name is Cecil Prescott, and I'm here with
Celeste Carey.
We're speaking reflection responses to
just trying to hold it together. I mean, like I've said, and like Cody and I were talking earlier, we're trying to maintain the type of upbringing and spiritual compass that was exemplified by mamas, black mamas worldwide, telling their kids, no, I'm sorry, you best not call anybody a lion. Can I say,
yes,
can I
yes,
say,
we can.
Can I say lion?
Oh, lion.
A lion ass dog. Yeah. I'm sorry, dogs everywhere.
Yes.
That is not fair to dogs.
Do dogs lie?
They lay down, they lie
yes,
on the ground,
yes,
but they don't lie. They don't prevaricate.
Okay, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do not prevaricate.
Yeah.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and we will go to our next caller. Good morning, Harvey.
Good morning, Harvey.
Hi, Celeste and Cecil. I'm very serious about what I'm about to say based on the historical past of the way human beings interact. And essentially, we're kept apart by various forces in today's world by the media. And they make us see each other as the other, the one to be feared. And this seems to be the way it's going to go. And it's happening worldwide as well. So I believe that the only solution to this problem is a landing by extraterrestrials who would be the true other, and suddenly we would all see each other as human beings, as one, and with the and they would be the true others. So I think that's the only solution. I can't see, because as long as we're here on the world, you know, we use any, if you look worldwide, we'll use anything to see the other as the other and to exploit the other. And so I think we need a universal change, and that would be, I believe the universe is teeming with life, and that would be a connection with the true other, some sort of extraterrestrial life form, and then we will come together.
So,
I don't see it.
So until that happens, let me ask you, what are you doing in terms of, if you're a person of color, in terms of coping, or if you're a white person in terms of challenging the paradigm of white supremacy?
Yes, one thing I do is I very closely watch the language I use, because I think the language is the machinery by which human beings function. So, like, for instance, instead of saying African-American, I'll say he's an American of African descent. By putting the word American first, he is entitled to all the full privileges of being born in America. But when one would say, "Well, he's an African American," that, you know, all the, you know, the concept is that he's African before American. I'm very much into, like, when I don't use the words black and white, because if you look in the dictionary, black is everything dark and evil, and white is everything pure and pristine.
Well, not exactly, and I think that's kind of a reductionist position to take, because there are a lot of people who are quite happy with being called black.
Okay, well, then I always use the word people. In other words, I won't just say blacks or whites. I'll say people, you know, people of color or something. I always put in the word people. I always personify rather than objectify, because in war, you know, we have names for the enemy, and it's always a word, and it doesn't personify. It actually, you know,
it objectifies and abstracts to keep
so
us.
So these are some of the things that I do to try to change things. I try to change my language and be very conscious of the language I'm using, and show respect through language.
Okay.
Thank you very much. In terms of language, because language is important. One thing that I often do is in terms of trying to respect the language and respect people. So if they have a preference on how to be called, I defer to how they wish to be addressed.
Well, thank you for the show.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
You know, I was thinking, you know, when Harvey was saying something about an extraterrestrial landing, my mind went to a guest we had, a most esteemed guest, that being Derek Bell.
Nice.
And I was thinking, I don't know, Space Traders is the story. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I suggest you read a story by Derek Bell, D-E-R-R-I-C-K, and last name is B-E-L-L. Now, part one, I believe there's a part two as well, but you want to read Derek Bell's Space Traders. And if anything, that just kind of tells you the duplicity of white supremacy, even when it comes down to an extraterrestrial landing. I don't know about that.
great book and subject for a longer conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Coming up at this morning on KBOO is the OMO Variety Hour at 9. Dan Handelman of Cop Watch talks about changes in police behavior in Portland. And Ellen Wider talks about his new book, Stud Turkel, Politics, Culture, but Mostly Conversation. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. On Locus Focus at 10:15, Barbara Bernstein talks with energy expert Richard Heinberg, co-author of Our Renewable Future, which is about the challenges and opportunities presented by the shift to renewable energy. Stay tuned at 11 for Grace Reed, who hosts Disability Awareness. And at 11:30 on Voices for the Animals, Courtney Scott speaks with Lisa Brisley about the Global March for Elephants and Rhinos happening in Portland for the first time this year. and why this march is so necessary to save these animals from extinctions. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on donate.
Yay. Well, we've got a few minutes here. Let's see if we can get to our next callers. Good morning, Michael. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. First of all, that last guy that's talking about Martians, I mean, that's the most ridiculous
He didn't say Martians, Michael. Come on.
When you talk about extraterrestrials.
There's other planets besides Mars.
God.
Hey, well, look, I'm down with you on that one. Right. You know, yeah, but we're just talking. We're just using allegories. Come on.
You know, Jesus, when he was down on earth, he left a blueprint on how people can get together.
True.
Now, if you're not looking at that blueprint and you're looking elsewhere, then you're looking in the wrong place. But what I want to say, though, is that guy was talking about reparation. Now, that's a good conversation.
That was David. Or Daniel. Yeah, the guy from David from San Francisco, right.
Now, right now, reparations is being given to Hispanics. They're the ones that's getting the reparation. Now,
Wait.
Yeah, you know you got to explain how.
I think I challenged you on this a little while ago.
Let me explain. Okay. Now, all the struggles that we as black people are going through, most of the changes that have taken place in America, you know, with civil rights and all that, other groups of people other than black people benefit from that. And a lot of them get a lot further because of the changes black people made, more so than black people. Now, what black people do is like being in a traffic jam, and all the cars are lining up single file to get through a certain area, and then you see these cars on the side, they don't get in line, they come all the way up to the top and they cut in and then they go through. Well, that's what's happening in society. Black people are doing all the struggling, we're standing in line, then you got 11 million people come to America and they just cut in line and they go through first.
Yeah, I wanted to have this conversation with you because I think your argument is one I've heard before, and I think I certainly agree with you in terms of the struggle for civil rights, in terms of the people who worked for it for many, many years and centuries. But my understanding of civil rights is that civil rights is it's not like a pie. It's not like it's so many pieces you can get. Civil rights or human rights are for all. And so when one group benefits, all groups should benefit. Now, I might agree with you that it appears that that black people continue to be in the back, that they haven't received the fruits of our labors. But I don't think we benefit by trying to pit one group against the other.
I'm not trying to pit one group against the other, but the other groups that are benefiting, they're not getting shot. They're not in the trenches and everything. They're on the sideline quiet. When the last time you seen Mexicans out there on the forefront?
Well,
that's the thing.
The last time you seen them out there?
Wait a minute. That's the whole point, Michael. They are.
And we don't see them because of the media.
The media may not portray them. And then you also have to look at when there's more happening in this world than what we see in American corporate directed media. You have to get way out of our news systems to find out what's going on.
And there's a hashtag.
No, hold on.
And there's a hashtag, I can't recall it, in terms of Latinos who are killed by the cops and how they're not, there's no coverage. Native Americans continues to be behind blacks in many cases.
And then there's the fact that, first and foremost, why do people have to get killed to validate a need for, rights? We don't want to see more people getting killed to justify a claim. We want to see less people getting killed. We want to see more people coming together. And there are more people coming together. I hear what you're saying, but I can't predicate any success for Black America based on some other ethnic or ideological group having to suffer more. There's no justice in that, you know. Okay, so what would be the criteria then for them to get?
Well, the criteria for them to get is, you know, when you look on all of these shows, when you look at every example in society of somebody struggling to overcome, you know, oppression or whatever in America, it's primarily the Black person that's doing it. You don't see the other minority groups, man, that seem to be struggling.
Okay, if we don't see them, it's because we're not looking. There are enough stories. There are enough. Well, then you're looking in the wrong place. I'm going to tell you, I got people that I work with who tell me what they have gone through to get where they are now. People who left their country because there was nothing there for them to do, nothing there for them to get, not enough education, no jobs. Come here and start at the very bottom and work hard to make it to the top, or at least make it. And I've gone to school with people like that, live next door to. They are there. We just have to open up our eyes and listen and look past all of these destructive artificial barriers that are putting up to get people upset about what we think somebody's getting. You know, I'm still waiting to hear what these reparations are that these folks are getting, because I see them struggling. But you did say, you just didn't say what they were.
Here's a reparation. If you look in society, the Mexican family are the only ethnic group that's walking around with 6-7 people in their families, because they can afford that, because they're getting...
No, who told you that? I have a friend who is from Mexico, and she comes from a hardworking family where they don't have a lot, but there's a big family because there's a big family. And if you don't know what big families come from, I mean, they're not getting paid for that. That's the way Black families used to have big families too. Were we getting paid? No.
Americans can't afford big families, but the Mexicans.
Michael, I'm going to tell you this. You know what? You know what? A lot of times you make good points, but you have skidded off the rails the past few times. We need because you're holding on to white supremacist lies about people of color. That's why I say you skidded off the rails. That is a lie. Not all of them are benefiting. I'm sorry. You got to read. You know what?
I want to ask Michael. Michael, what is the benefits that Mexicans get?
Yeah, I want to know.
They get money to have for each kid. That's why most.
Who gives them this money? Who gives them this money?
This is
government.
What branch of the government gives them this money? What branch of the government? You know what? Mail us some proof. I want to see a copy of something, some document or something that says this. Don't just tell me this. No, not another thing, brother. We got two more people in 3 minutes, and so thank you.
So I think it's really unfortunate, as you suggested, when pitting people against color. I mean, that seems like the power of white supremacy.
Yes, of white supremacy.
And these myths that these people get certain benefits is also a lie. And the sad thing about it is that the last caller reflects lots of Black people, and in other communities of color, mm-hmm. you often hear the same thing.
The same thing about another
ethnic group, mm-hmm. or about Black people, and it just tells me how much work we have to do.
Well, it's like Derek Bell was saying, he was speaking on the permanence of racism, the permanence of white supremacy. We got. Oh, I don't know. We're not getting to anybody else. We're sorry for the other callers. We do ask you to call early, and then you can always get us by email. You know, You can always communicate by email. We want to thank folks, and we want to remind you the point is of this conversation was to reflect upon ways of self-care so that during these perilous times, we can stay connected to each other. And whether that our, you know, our white listeners and white neighbors giving up parts of white privilege, or are folks of color making sure they get adequate care. Do that so that you can take care of each other and don't believe the lies of the white supremacist machinery. This is your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, more talk radio, and we're going to talk our way through this nonsense.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Extreme Amateur Games BMX Competition. Round 2, Sunday, August 28th at D Block Indoor Skate Park in Clackamas. This is Round 2 in the Mad Bro Extreme Amateur Games. Winners are allowed to compete in the following competitions and in the final. Again, that's Extreme Amateur Games BMX Competition Round 2. Sunday, August 28th at D Block Indoor Skate Park, 8921 Southeast Jansen Road in Clackamas. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Rags to Riches Jazz Concert and live broadcast on Saturday, August 27th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Holiday Park in Portland. Swing dance lessons start an evening of live music with breaks included for short informational speeches about the life and history of jazz in the early 20th century. Again, that's Rags to Riches Jazz Concert and live broadcast